Taste of Country Nights with Evan Paul on demand. In this episode, we talk with Thompson Square.
I think country music is cool. I don't think we need every rock and pop star in country music to make us cooler.
Ooh, this is a good episode. Get in here, check out the full interview at Thompson Square. Thanks for listening. All right, Taste of Country, we're in here with T2.
What's up, dude?
Thompson Square, how y'all doing?
Great.
Man, we're good.
It's always good to have you guys in here. A, to see that you guys are still married. Like,
We're just here.
You're fighting an uphill battle, with the divorce rate.
You know, even if you split up, it's still financially beneficial to have the parents.
Honestly, it's funny that you say that because yesterday, a fan came
yesterday
up.
Yesterday, we filed.
You have to tell the story about yesterday.
Well, no, we were doing the CMA Fest signing booth over there. In downtown, and this usher came up to me. It's probably mid-50s, early 60s. And he goes, man, he goes, I don't want to bother you. I just want to tell you I'm a massive fan. I love the new single, You Were There. I've been following your career, and I'm really glad to see you and Shauna back together. He goes, I know you guys had a rough patch, and I'm really glad to see you guys back together making music. You know, I was like, man, yeah, I'll tell you what, it's been tough. It's been tough.
What were you saying, though?
Well, she wasn't there.
Oh, okay. I was like in the bathroom or something.
We made it out to the other side, brother. I appreciate you praying for us. You know,
Thompson.
It's just easier to go with it, man, than to
so
go.
Bad.
You know what? Actually, it was funny. Well, then half the people, like we had someone yesterday we met outside of our bus because we have it parked in a near a honky tonk in Nashville. We're just going to stay there and they're in the bus in camp. And someone came up and she was like, now you guys are married?
Are you brother and sister?
And I was like, yes and yes.
Yes and yes.
We are both roll tied.
This is where we're from, right?
Dude.
But does that add like extra pressure to, like, not only the relationship, but the band? Like, if you guys get into an argument, like, okay, most couples have the relationship and the kid they got to worry about, and maybe a dog.
Right. Yeah.
But if you guys get into an argument, do you have the added pressure of, gosh, much would end?
It's very Irish.
Kiefer has so much fun with that on the bus. Or even, like, yesterday before our show for CMA Fest, we have a new guitar player, so he doesn't know, like, our dynamic yet. And I can't remember what I had said to you, and you like went off on me.
I was kidding.
But Gabe was like, "Oh man, what just happened?
I'm gonna put these two fingers right in your throat, lady." And I'm just so we talk like to each other like that, just because it makes everyone feel really awkward. But it's a very we're not Italian, we're Irish, but it's like very like you would think that you know the Italian family very loud and boisterous. It's the same thing with Irish people, and
he has fun with it.
And yeah, we go at it, and then she'll say stuff, and you'll just see everybody very conservative guy just kind of looking at his wife going, "These people are crazy." You know, we've been married 28 years, dude. I mean, we've been together 28.
Well, there was that two year hiatus through it.
Yeah.
Right.
It was a rough patch, I'm going to tell you, but we made it through.
Yeah,
we made
I was praying for you. Tell me about You Were There.
Oh, wow. Man, you know, this song was pitched to us, what, two record deals ago?
Yeah, we've had it for a while.
And Shauna found it again.
Yeah, I heard the demo the first time. Probably the first 10 or 12 times I listened to the demo. I cried every single time. And I was like, man, there's something to this. If it's making me feel this way, other people are going to, you know, experience this, hopefully. So, JT Harding and Josh Osborne and Ryan Tindall wrote it. And we were just able to talk to them about a little bit about how they wrote it and everything.
Yeah, we did a podcast
with them.
It's
a really special song.
It is, man. Honestly, it's better than everybody else's song. it's the best song ever. So if you don't play, no one playing this song, they're just dumb. You know,
I agree.
All kidding aside, though, I mean, it's such a special piece of music, and where Sean and I are at in our career, in our life, and geographically, and everything right now, we don't want to put anything else out into the world if it doesn't have some meat on it. We don't want to, I mean, it's got to mean something to us. I mean, at this point in my life, we don't want to put anything out. It's just like we're chasing someone else, or we're trying to sound like this person, or, hey, this is successful, let's do that. exactly how they did it. And, you know, we just want to be authentic to ourselves, and we've always kind of tried to be that way, you know, and we have, you know, the latitude to do that even more now, but it's just, this song was so special, and, you know, when we play it out, we get the same reaction. We had a podcast with JT and Josh the other day, and Josh was saying, man, this is probably one of my top 5-6 songs I've ever been a part of.
And he's written some incredible songs.
Yeah, and I know JT really well. We've written a bunch of songs together, but I don't know Josh at all. So it was our first time meeting via Zoom. And the genuine nature of what his response was and the dialogue that we had in between each other, it was very genuine. And I was just like, wow, this guy's legitimately, he's like, I'm all about this song, man. Just the fact that you guys took this song and did what you did to it. Because once they heard our version of it, they were like, cause they were in love with the demo. And we as writers, if we go out and we knock the crap out of a demo, it's like, man, can't ever beat it. And a lot of times a producer will come in and screw up a good song because they just should have just used the demo or copied it. But we changed it a little bit, and they were like, man, it's so much bigger and better. And just, you know, the fact that we love the demo so much, then we're just in love with this version.
And we
so
found
it was
out
really cool
that Kenny had it on hold. Kenny Chesney had it on hold. And for whatever reason, it didn't make his album. So we're so thankful that it didn't make his album.
Well, and for some reason, I'm not sure. Songs Father Away, like Kiss Me or Not, found its way to us after 2 years of never being pitched. You know, it just found its way. And we had this song before, and it just found its way back into it. We're like, how did we miss this before?
And how long did Kenny have it on hold?
I don't know,
but the song is a little bit older. So yeah. I'm not sure which record cycle it was supposed to be on. But
yeah. Do you ever talk to a Kenny about that? Do you like?
No, I mean, it'd be cool to sit down and talk to Kenny.
Yeah. I only had one interaction with Kenny when we won the ACM award, and he slapped me on the butt when I went up to get my award.
He did. He gave him the attaboy. I was like, that was the coolest thing ever.
He just made it into the Country Music Hall of Fame. We're asking people to say some words about him. Or, you know.
Well, I tell you, I kind of don't like Kenny Chesney, and I'm going to tell you why. When I moved to town from Oklahoma in 1996, I found this song called When I Close My Eyes. Right, I had this song, hadn't been cut yet. This manager figure, ridiculous situation that I was working with, quote unquote. I came to town, had this song. I was working with Nelson Larkin. We were going to get this deal. This song was going to be the big single. You know, we were going to launch this thing. First day in Nashville, right? So driving around in my 89 Blazer with my U-Haul in the back, I go to a Western store called Nashville Cowboy and take the wanted sign out. Say, I got to have a job. I ain't leaving until I have it. She said, all right, you're hired. So take that. Couple days later, I'm vacuuming the floor. It's closing time, and I hear, when I close my eyes. And I'm just like, you got to be freaking kidding me.
What?
And Chesney had some songs that hadn't broke up to that point. And I was like, I'm going to tell you right now, that song is going to be his first number one record. And if memory serves me correctly, it was his first number one record. And I was like, dang it, I got to start all over.
What?
Yeah, and 13 short years later, we found another good song.
So we're hoping for the reverse to happen with us with this song.
Yeah, I want to have the success. So Kenny's like, that guy, I should have cut that song.
That's awesome.
He's a great guy.
I mean, we can't say enough amazing things about him. I mean, I just saw some footage from the Sphere they're doing at the Sphere and like how epic it is. And that's what his career has been. It's just epic. Like,
it has been.
Talk
know.
About picking great songs and knowing like who you are as an artist.
Well,
it doesn't get any better than that.
Over the decades, not changing or you know, like chasing something. It's just kind of been a constant throughout and there's been a few artists like that, you know, but he's one of those guys that just been a continuous right down the middle, never really kind of veered and changed from what he did. And, you know, from his branding and everything else with the beach and all that stuff, it's just, cut some great freaking songs over the years.
Give me, in your guys' opinion, because now you guys are independent, kind of doing your own thing and being able to stick with what you are. What are the state of country music? Like, it kind of sounds like... Well, kind of sounds
you
like,
don't want to ask me that.
It kind of sounds like you have something you want to say about it a little bit.
The state of country music?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Well, you know, I love country music. First and foremost, I love this town. Me and Sean have been here for a long time. I wish, as all artists wish, I wish the business would let artists be artists, and they won't for the most part, unless something already popped off organically, and then they'll get behind it and embrace it. I have a few issues with certain things. I think that I think country music is cool. I don't think we need every rock and pop star in country music to make us cooler. I get collaborations, but when you're relying on those collaborations to kind of put your name in the lights or whatever else, I just think we're cool enough, you know? And that's the one. I had this conversation with someone last night. Country music artists have always been regular people. It's always been about the working man. It's always been about the blue collar, everyday husband and wife, hard working, hard times, all that. This is what country music's always been about historically. If you go back through time, you got Waylon and Willie and Haggard and Jones and all, and even before that, Farron Young and Hank Williams, all these different people, they were such iconic figures in themselves, but they weren't celebrity. They were celebrities, but they didn't think that. It looked that way mm-hmm. when you looked upon them. They were just regular people that didn't shower for 16 days and were on the road and would go out and just play these freaking songs that the working man and the common man could relate to. And it's just so funny to me, like on award shows. And listen, if Elvis Presley came back and said, I want to do this duet with Thompson Square, I'm going to do it. But I love a lot of what's going on, you know, but then when you have an award show where, you know, the biggest award of the night goes to Beyonce, and I'll just say it, cause I don't care. It's ridiculous. You know, I think it's so, you know, Post Malone is here, and I don't know Post, but I highly respect what he's doing. I love the music he's putting out, and he's doing what Darius did when he came over from Hootie. He's embracing the community. He loves country music. I'm not sure that Beyonce's busting out some Haggard in her car, you know, in her Bentley or whatever. And no cut to her. But everyone says it. Everyone's saying it off a microphone. Everybody in town, you know. And I think it's just sad that we're turning our back on ourselves as a genre in some of this stuff. And you've got people who have dedicated their entire life who are in some of these same categories who are out there singing their ass off every night singing country music because they lived it. They loved it. They spent all the time trying to get a record deal. They got a record deal. They wrote the songs. They sweated it out. They were poor. They were broke. They were sleeping in their freaking car in a camper trailer, KOAB campground. And the list goes on and on and on. And then they make it, you know, and then they have massive hits. They're selling out arenas. They're selling this stuff out. And then you get beat out by somebody who's not even in your genre. I know exactly how that feels. You know, I think country's cool enough, and I wish that we could look at it ourselves and go, we're cool enough, man. Let's not be that. Let's not, you know, try to compete with what that is. You know, let's just be who we are. And because you can tell from people who don't get played on the radio, the sellout arenas, you know, streaming.
There's more and more now.
Dude,
yeah.
Streaming like crazy. Yeah. Outstreaming major artists right now that don't play on the radio because people are telling them what they want, you know? And the fact that you can hear some country music on the radio again is really refreshing to me. You know, I love it. And I don't care if it's pop or rock or whatever else. If it's good, I get it, you know? But I hope we just don't lower the standard so much that we're just kind of...
We don't have any icons anymore.
Everyone's just... It's not supposed to be everyone's welcome. Everyone's not welcome. And if you think about it, not only that sounds harsh, but everyone's not what... If you don't put any time in and you don't love it and you don't work it and you didn't grow up like this and you don't have that passion for it, you're just like, man, I can sneak in there and maybe try to get some money. I got this TikTok thing that popped off and I'm going to go in there and get some money. And the industry's looking at that stuff too and going, hey, they just popped off on TikTok. Let's sign them and soak all that juice off the plate and then throw that biscuit away. You know what I mean? It's the same thing that's kind of always been going on, but... There, when you went to fanfare back in the 90s, say, and I didn't, when I first moved here, artists were elusive. And you looked on these people and they were like, ooh, my God, there was Alan Jackson. Oh my God, there's Garth Brooks over there.
Right, right.
And now it's like, who's that? and we're not the biggest artist in the world. You know, not everybody knows who we are, but I don't know who anybody is. And it's like, oh, that's
so many.
They're
artists
on TikTok or they're on Instagram or whatever else. I'm just going, man, it's so crazy. That it's just so different. And maybe I'm just older and, it, you know, and that's just kind of how we feel about it. But I know there's a lot of people that feel this way. And, you know, like we were at CMA Fest the other day and we're talking to this dude. And he's like, man, yeah, I've written 10 songs. I'm trying to save up money to buy one or sell, record one or whatever. And I was just going, I mean, we couldn't have got in that room back in the day when we were coming up playing for Tips on Broadway. You think we could have gotten that room back then? It had a credential and do all that stuff. You know, there's something about the craft of working your butt off to get into this country music community. Because when we got in and when we quote unquote made it, dude, it felt, we felt like we were always on the outside, always.
And then we still
feel like we're on the outside. But once we got accepted in there and we started winning awards and having hits and stuff, it was the most incredible feeling to be a part of this community. It should be hard to get in. If it's just easy to get in, what's the point? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to have great songs. You got to be able to sing, for God's sake. You can't sing, you know?
Yeah.
Let's go. Get some lessons.
Aren't you glad you asked that question?
I am.
He knew exactly what he was going to get.
Yeah, oh yeah. I wanted the heat, man. No,
but I love country music. I love Nashville and really to surmise all that stuff. I personally think, and Sean thinks it too, I think we're cool enough, you know? I mean, I think we really need to embrace each other as a genre and be country. I mean, country's kicking butt, man, you know? That's just kind of my take on the last 20 years.
No, I love it. Thank you. Let me ask, when you guys hear a duet, can you tell if the singers are in love or if they're just two people that are singing?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Dan and Shay are not sleeping together. I could be mistaken, but just from the tonality of their words, I would say they're not having sex.
As soon as you said that, I immediately thought, and this is throwback, but Kenny and Dolly, like you always kind of thought maybe something was going on there, you know, because their chemistry was just so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You'd be like, maybe they're.
See, right. So there could be, there's something to it, you think? Like audibly?
I no, for sure. Like it, I'm not, you're gonna make me look like I'm not no more butthole stuff for me. I'm not doing that. But no, you can tell when a guy and a girl are singing together on stage and if they're sleeping together or if they're in love or they're making out or something's new there. There's just gotta be a spark. And it drives me crazy when you see this because you're actors and you're actresses on stage. And you know, when you have a guy and a girl who are not intimately involved singing an intimate song, it's super creepy to me. It's like the Kindle kind of thing, you know, when
you're throwing it back even
it's like when father and daughter were talking about having an affair in a song or whatever it was. That's cringy.
okay that's fair.
But I love it when
Kenny and Dolly work so well because they really did love each other.
They were actors too. I mean, they played the part, you know. They played the part and they got into it. And your job is to make these believe, oh my gosh, those people are sleeping together. And that's what me and Sean try to do that every night. We try to convince people that we're actually sleeping together.
You know? What's a song that Kiefer plays that all the time that you hate? Not like...
like that he plays around the hat, like like his go-to?
Yeah.
Oh, not this one.
Oh my gosh.
I'm wearing you out on
one. There's a song called Hot Water Pipe.
Have you guys heard this?
Exactly.
No.
David Ball.
It's a great country song. Like, it's got some great Telecaster like guitar on it and stuff, but he plays it over and over and over again. I'm so much so that Cooper has learned it now.
Our 9-year-old's like, hot water pipe, hot water pipe.
So we'll be out like shopping and you'll hear Cooper singing it. And I'm like, please, I get this enough at home. But
that one, and I've been wearing out Dale Watson here lately with, oh, I lie when I drink.
Okay.
It's weird to hear my son go, and I drank a lot. Don't believe me. I've just been into that.
What about Shauna? What's the way?
She doesn't listen to a lot of music.
I don't. I really don't. Isn't that weird?
You're weird.
That is weird. But my go-to is usually...
This is over.
My go-to is usually Etta James. And, well, like, I don't think you would get tired of hearing that.
You can't wear out Etta James.
Yeah.
I'm consumed. I listen to music all the time, and I get onto something. But I can't answer that question because I honestly, mm-hmm. you don't just sit around the house.
I'm not annoying like you.
Yeah. That's what it is. That's what it is.
What's next for you guys?
It looks like we're going to do, probably drop this EP, in mm-hmm. the fall, maybe August, September. And then, we have some ideas floating around about how this next album's going to come together. Probably going to be called Roots, like the tour this year. And we're kind of toying with maybe doing an acoustic-ish record.
Really getting back to how we started. Cause that's how we started.
That's how we started playing
down
music,
on Broadway, you know?
You know, so yeah, a lot of stuff going on. You know, Shauna's got her solo project.
Yeah.
It's called Lean on Neon, which is very hard to say.
I thought when I first read it, I thought it was Leon Neon.
Leon.
Yeah, when we're typing it out, like when I'm posting anything, we accidentally do that sometimes. I have to go back in and edit it. Yeah, it's easy to do.
Yeah, so it's one of the best records that I've ever heard. She's doing a show on Tuesday.
Yeah. Tomorrow.
So that's going to be fun. At Eastside Bowl for the Honky Tonk Tuesday thing. If your listeners haven't heard this music, go listen to it and you're going to want to buy it. It's absolutely astounding. If you like country music, you know, if you don't like country music, I wouldn't buy it. It's too country for you. So we're doing that. I'm out touring stand-up comedy right now. Kiefer Comedy is everything. Doing Zanies tonight and doing a few Funny Bone shows in the middle of the month and the Punchline in Atlanta coming up here in August, I think. So starting to tour that, and then,
we're
EP,
busy.
Man, it's a lot, you know.
Wow,
it's a lot.
Okay. In addition to playing some shows.
Yeah, we're doing that. And then the only other thing we got going on is if you're a fan of Thompson Square and you want to be on a tour bus, if you go to thompsonsquare.com, you can go, there's a button that says get on the bus, and you can actually get your face on our bus.
That's what that is. Yeah. I thought y'all were just like offering up credentials for people to like get on your bus.
Well, in a way, so you get your face on the bus. I'm going to give you a giveaway, a $4,000 guitar that I designed with the company Veritas Guitar, Casey, that my friend. And so we're giving away a guitar. You'll have access to an EP that's just music that you will hear. No one else has ever heard this.
There's
it's unreleased.
On merch.
Merch and meet and greets and all that stuff. You know, it's $99 it's a pretty cool little thing, man. But yeah, we have a lot of faces on the bus right now. And so it's kind of
cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
I love that. Well, thank you guys for coming by. Yeah,
absolutely.
I appreciate
Thanks for
that.
Having
absolutely.
Us.
All right, let's bring in Billy Dukes to dissect this fruitful interview that we had with Thompson Square. What do you got, man?
So the thing here, I think, with this one. So my question to you is, why that question about his thoughts on country music? Did you see something on socials that inspired it? Like, where did that come from? Because that wasn't on my list.
Interesting question. Okay, so I don't know. I was like reading all of his bios that his record label sent and, you know, all the things about how they've stayed true to their roots despite, you know, other things and blah, blah, blah. And then once I had that planted, I still wasn't going to ask him that, but... Once I saw, like, I don't know, he said something that ignited my, like, he wants to get this off his chest. He's got something. So I felt like just giving him that opportunity. And I knew once that he started opening up that we had a treasure trove of something going on, because I was like, this guy's going to speak his mind. And the other thing is that he's kind of like independent per se on his own label, or, you know, so he's not on a major label. So he can now talk about that stuff. It's almost like, you know, the time has passed and he was ready.
It was a good 8-minute sort of soliloquy because, and as I kind of watched back, I was looking for cues that maybe Shauna, his wife, wasn't like, there was nothing from her that said, okay, Kiefer, wrap it up, or you're really talking for a long time, or like she never tried to sort of cut in and curtail his message at all. She didn't look anxious or nervous. And that was really interesting to me as well.
I thought that was too. I thought for sure she would have cut him off or something. And, you know, he even said, I don't remember if it was on the interview or afterwards, but it was something like, Shauna's going to, you know, have something to say when we get back into the car. But I think that, you know, with the fact that they're married and they've been paired together for such a long time, she kind of knows what she signed up for. Maybe she was just waiting for someone to give them that open space to go as well. I don't know. I've never heard them go nuts like that before on any other outlet, let alone with me. So I feel like I don't know. To re-answer your first question, I think God was just like, dude, you need to ask him about this because he's got something to say. You can just tell from his body language that he was ready to eat.
So a little fact check on him here is Beyonce won the top country album at the Grammys. He didn't win the ACM or she didn't win an ACM or a CMA for her country album. It was the Grammys, in which he probably knew, but he didn't state the award. And I think some people, as I kind of read narratives on social media when like the award shows come up, people seem to get upset about the ACMs or the CMAs awarding Beyonce awards. And that hasn't been the case at all. In fact, that's really upsets people who support Beyonce's country project, is that the ACMs and the CMAs have not given her any love. It was that sort of all-genre Grammy vote, which is obviously still really, really significant, but the voters there are a much different base than like just your country music voters that vote for the CMAs and stuff.
Yeah, and that's just kind of like the telephone game when you're a kid. It's like the message, mm-hmm. you know, gets lost, but that's why we have Billy Dukes to clear things up like that. You know, I call him Encyclopedia Dukes because he knows everything about country music. I don't know about anything else. You know, you might be a genius, but I don't know. No. You know, I just know what you know about country.
Did you feel like you needed to push back at any point?
No. No, that's not my space. You know, I didn't. No, I didn't want to enter. I mean, there are things that I'll give my opinion on, but I felt like as the interviewer on that one, like, you know, I learned from back in the day, Wayne's World and Kanye West. What's his name? Wayne's World guy.
Mike Myers.
Yeah,
or Dana
Mike
Carvey.
Myers was on TV. Remember, he was live on TV with Kanye West, and Kanye said something out of pocket, and Mike Myers just stood there and stared. I was like, and that was the perfect, you know, reaction, because I try not to nod my head like, yeah, uh-huh, because then people think that I agree with him. I don't agree or disagree. I just take the facts and stuff like that.
Yeah, see, I don't know. I don't know that Kiefer really said anything that was worth pushing back. Maybe if you had a strong opinion on Beyonce's projects, but I don't think you really do. But I've been kind of reading a lot of, I don't know, I was listening to someone kind of do a critique of Joe Rogan's interview style. And he often has guests on his podcast that are pretty inflammatory and say some things that maybe just require a certain amount of fact checking. And Joe Rogan will rarely like challenge his guests and say like, wait, what you're saying is kind of wild. Maybe not true. Like, can we get a better look at that? Like, I think to a certain degree, you have to kind of, if people are getting way out there, kind of reel them in a little bit.
I could see
it's
that.
It's a hard line to find, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I could see that. And you know, I wasn't too knowledgeable about the awards, but if he would have started, right. you know, saying like, I mean, there was actually a point where I was about to say something, but I didn't, but... You know, because Beyonce is from Houston, so she's from Texas. So when he's talking about artists not going to rodeos and things like that, nobody knows. Like, you know, Destiny's Child and Beyonce, they started doing local Texas stuff. I mean, they probably sang at their share of rodeos and things like that. And
right,
you know, she's from Texas, so. You know, that's kind of what you do when you're in Texas. You know, so you know, there's things like that, but I didn't feel like important for me to jump in on that. But, you know, if he would have kept hammering at that, I guess I would have brought it up. But I didn't want to get into a battle. You know, I want to let him give the message that he wanted to give. If his wife wasn't interrupting him, I wasn't going to, you know.
So I thought the second part of what he said was actually maybe more interesting too, about how everyone's not welcome in country music. And what he meant by that is you have to a certain extent, pay your dues and do the hard work. And his story about CMA Fest and standing next to an artist that had written like 10 songs and was hoping for his big break on social media and no one knows who he or she was, like, that sort of rings true to like how I see country music today as well. But I'm not sure if it's because there are more artists or if it's just because as I'm getting older, I'm getting a little bit more get off my lawn kind of old man-ish. And I can't quite decide which is the real thing there.
Well, I think that if, you know, this being known as a 10-year town, the people that skirt that 10 years, you know, are always going to be side-eyed, I think. Whether it's someone like Post Malone, true, Beyonce, or it's a viral person that skirted and got in. Like, let's say what's the kid's name? Tucker Wetmore, where he, you know, is a brand new artist, but his tour sold out before he even had 3 songs under his belt, like recorded. So, you know, there's different scopes of those artists nowadays that aren't putting in their 10 years. And I think that, you know, if you spend your life, if you're an artist and you spend your life worried about that, you're never going to do what you want to do. You know, if it could take you 10 years to make it, or it could take you a year. But if you're bitter toward those other people, I think that's where there's going to be an issue, you know?
Yeah, no one's going to turn down that viral success when it comes. Be like, no, I'm not ready for that. Pump the brakes on all of this fame right, and success and money. Like,
yeah, like, let's go. Right, like Bailey Zimmerman, like, I don't know what he, like, worked on Cars or something, and he made a video where he was singing, and now look at him, like, he's going nuts.
There were other parts of this interview that were pretty interesting. I can't remember any of them. I thought I thought your question about being able to identify songs, duets that were from people who were related was that was an interesting. It's almost like that sibling harmonies. People say it's something special with sibling harmonies, like our married couple harmonies different.
Yeah. Those kind of unique. See, I feel that. And I'm glad that he said that, because there are some where you could tell that they're not in love, you know, and yep. Granted, like, I mean, like Jason Aldean and Carrie Underwood's duet, you know, they're not in love, but you know, there's some that if you just hear and don't know who they are, I feel like you could tell if it's just two random people singing or, you know, it's, but I don't know. I'm easily fooled. Like when I watch the Olympics and the figure skating, the pairs, yeah, it looks like they're in love, but they're not.
It reminds me of Blake and Miranda. Like before they started dating, they did a duet of a song. I can't think of the title of it, but the YouTube video is out there, and they both said like that song. They knew they started to have some chemistry sort of during that performance, and you can see it like in the performance. It's kind of wild. And then flash forward to like before Gwen and Blake were a thing, they did this thing on Jimmy Fallon's show. And it was like this playful sort of karaoke. And I remember watching it going, whoa, what's going on here? Like, there is something up with these two, because it was just so flirty. It was almost the tension between them was almost palpable. It was fascinating to watch.
And who would have thought that Gwen Stefani and Blake Shelton would end up like they are, right? Like, that was crazy to me.
Yeah. So there's some truth to that. Well, good interview, man. I like Thompson Square. These another artists that I've gone back dang near 15, 20 years with them. So it's cool when they come in.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, thanks, man. It was a lot of fun hanging out with them. And anytime they come in, it's a lot of fun. We got a lot more interviews coming your way. Parker McCollum is going to be hanging out on Taste of Country Nights on Demand. We have, I don't even know who's next, but this is the season where the artists are stopping by, because they got a lot going on right now in the middle of summer. So keep it.
Do me a favor. Make a list next time. Put a little list down so we don't stumble into this. I don't even know who we got.
I know. I do this every.
Let's just jot them down.
Okay, I will. Next time I will be prepared, I promise. But thank you so much for checking out Taste of Country Nights on Demand.